All right, we are in building what's now called Studio E. Actually, this is the building where Channel 9 was created. We created it here back when it was building 119. I haven't been here since, but it's nice to be back. You're now Studio E, and we're with Windows Embedded Engineers. Introduce yourself.
My name is Milan Savannah. I'm a development lead on the Windows Embedded team, and I work on these things called embedded enabling features. So it's basically we want to enable Windows to run on an embedded device. So we kind of tweak the OS, you know, hack it a little bit here and there to make it run better on
cool.
those devices.
And that'll be fun to talk about what those hacks are.
Sure.
Hi, I'm Oren Winter. I'm the development manager of the Windows Embedded Standard team. And that's basically the team that delivers the value of Windows Desktop into the embedded market.
Hello, I'm Mike Moini. I'm a dev lead on componentization on Windows Embedded.
Hi, I'm John Prati. I'm a dev lead on the tools for Windows Embedded, the tools that allow you to customize Windows the way you need it to be.
Excellent. So I think the obvious first question is, what is Windows Embedded, right? I mean, I've never spent any time with this team. I spent a lot of time with Rusinovich and those people over in Building 26. What is this thing?
So Windows Embedded, under the Windows Embedded business, we actually have two products. We have the Windows CE product, which I'm sure you know people have heard about.
Absolutely.
And we have the Windows Embedded Standard line of products. The last product that we shipped was Windows Embedded Standard 2009, which was based on Windows XP, also known as XP Embedded.
Okay.
And the next version is called Windows Embedded Standard 2011, which is basically Windows 7 Embedded, based on Windows 7. And what we're doing is we're delivering the Windows value to embedded OEMs to create specialized devices. Mm. Most of our customers are specifically enterprise customers that we basically give them a toolkit to go and build things like thin clients out of Windows bits and pieces, medical devices, industrial automation, gaming devices like casino gaming. Those are the main customers that we have today, and we're also seeing kind of a shift towards consumer-based devices with Windows Embedded Standard.
Interesting. So let's talk a little bit about how this is. Besides, obviously, I mean, the footprint, and you don't have a 2 gigabyte kernel. How is it composed? I mean, what does this look like?
So I can kind of give you the big picture of how we do it, and then these guys can probably go and
cool.
Extend that. In a sense, we're shipping three things. First of all is a componentized OS. So we take Windows 7, mm-hmm. And we break it down to discrete pieces or packages that customers can go and kind of put together and build their own Lego or Lego model from the Lego pieces that we deliver to satisfy whatever scenarios that they want. The second piece is basically a toolkit. So we go and componentize the OS, but we need to go and expose that to developers, and we do that via two tools that we're going to talk about today. And the third piece is what Milan said, those embedded enabling features. And those are the things in Windows that we either tweaked or added on to go and create embedded value. To give you a quick example, Windows 7 has really delivered great on performance, specifically on boot time. Mm. But even if you'll take, let's say, the 20 or 30 seconds of boot time, if you're going to go and create a consumer electronic devices, that might not be enough. People want to go and press the remote and have it boot in 5 seconds. So we've been doing those kind of things.
Excellent. Well, let's start right there then. So, I mean, what are some of these changes? I mean, clearly you guys don't have this sort of unbelievable driver model and sort of service model that the general purpose Windows has, right, which will impact boot time.
Right. But, well, one of the technologies that we do have is to increase the boot performance. It's called HORM, and that stands for Hibernate Once, Resume Many. The basic idea is, you hibernate the machine once, and it creates a hibernation file. And we have some technologies that prevent any changes to the media. So what we can do is, on every reboot, it resumes from that same hibernation file. So you get, you know, the speed of hibernation, and you don't have to create a new hibernation file every time. Hmm. So that's actually very popular with our OEMs and customers.
Okay, but so in that sense, I mean, if somebody has a device where they can install things, so this is sort of the scenario where you're not going to have a lot of modification to the system.
Right.
It's just going to be, this is what the device does, it's not going to change, so that model makes sense, right?
Yes, a lot of our customers don't need changes to persist, but if they do, there are kind of workarounds. So you could have multiple partitions, so you could protect the OS on one partition and enable HORM on it, and then on another partition, you could actually persist your changes.
Mm.
So I don't know, there's a team in Microsoft that's using our product, and what they do, I don't know if I can speak about what the team's doing exactly.
Probably, let's not, because I don't want to edit, but it's fine to say that someone's using your technology.
But they're doing that. They leave one partition that's unprotected, so changes can persist on it. Mm-hmm. And as well, we have a second, this whole protection thing, we have these things called write filters, and that's the thing that allows us to protect the device from any writes.
Mm.
So we have two of them, and one of them is used with HORM, where it protects the whole volume and nothing can get through it. And we have a second one called FBWF, and it stands for File-Based Write Filter.
Mm.
And what that does is it's a filter that sits on top of the file system, so it can do a little bit more intelligent filtering. So we can pick and choose files and directories that we want to protect or not protect. So you could actually say, you know, directory A is where I'm going to keep my data files, and that's going to persist across reboot. So we can enable those scenarios as well.
Interesting. And so, you know, on Channel 9, we've covered a lot of sort of how, you know, the architecture and even some of the implementation details, the Windows kernel. So you guys obviously have to have a memory manager and a scheduler and all these things. I mean, do you just take what's there, modify it for your scenario, or have you written your own memory manager and your own scheduler?
So the embedded team, just Oren mentioned, has three parts, you know, the componentization, the ifs, and the tools. Componentization is where we modify things and we write our own code and all of that. Componentization, what we do, what my team does, we basically get Windows 7 proper, mm-hmm. and we extract, we first make a foundation, which is which would be the basic Lego part, you know, which would be basic foundation. You will have that with every image. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you can pick and choose. So what we did, this is no new code. This is Windows 7 code. In cases, we modified the default behavior, you know, and, you know, we introduced new parameters just for consumption of the embedded board, but the logic is Windows 7 logic. So the componentization work was to break all that sea of binaries into packages, and we deduced a relationship between the packages, you know, what is the fundamental, what is not fundamental. We moved the components that are fundamental to the lower layer and the ones that are not to the top. So the customer can basically customize OS to what they need. If they want a media player, you know, Zoom-like device, mm-hmm. they would pick media player. Because they pick this one at the top level, it has dependencies. They have to resolve dependencies. There's some essential parts that you need for this to work. A media player would need some sort of codec. Mm-hmm. But then you can also have flexibility of picking up which type of codec and only include the ones that you want and not the ones that you don't.
Interesting. And so, I mean, you know, we've done a lot of talking in terms of, you know, the architecture of Windows 7. Understanding all the dependencies in Windows took, I don't know, 3 years to make that dependency map and then actually be able to create something like MinWin, which is for some reason a big deal amongst the press, but it's just a way of us understanding what's the minimum Windows you need to boot. Do you guys feed back information back to, like, the people in Building 26 where all the kernel types
absolutely.
Live?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
When you find new dependencies?
When we find new dependencies, there are efforts on our end, and, you know, it's being received well on the other end, so that we feed the knowledge that we learn back into the Windows. There are some weird dependencies that we could do without. You know, mm-hmm. you don't need to bring in all natural languages if you want to, you know, see your history in IE. And those are the ones that, you know, could be broken, yes.
Excellent. And so as far as tooling, you know, you're responsible for writing the tools that enable developers to take advantage of this componentization. What exactly are you doing?
Exactly. Our main tool, which is called ICE, Exactly. That's exactly what it does. It has like a Explorer on the list.
You should say what ICE is.
Sorry. Yeah. The Image Configuration Editor for Windows Embedded. It basically has an Explorer pane looking thing on the left-hand side, and that's all the components that these guys have produced for us. And we've written it in such a way such that the OEMs can pick up and address it just with drag and drop, build their version of Windows exactly how they need it to be,
only
keeping it just down to what they need for their hardware.
Excellent.
And their system. And we've tried to make it as intuitive as possible to use. And we've made some changes recently with the way settings, for example, work. So to make it so that if you want to change all your settings at once, you can do them at once. Or if you want to just drill in deep and look at specific things, you can do that as well.
Perfect.
So one of the things kind of to add to what John said about ICE and Image Configuration Editor.
Can you speak up a little louder? Pretend like you're yelling at me.
Sorry.
Pretend like I'm hard of hearing.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I don't have four mics.
One of the things to add to what John said about Image Configuration Editor is that we have, in Windows XP Embedded, we used to call a tool like that Target Designer. We have a new development tool in Windows Embedded Standard 2011. It's called IBW, or Image Based Wizard. And one of the coolest things about IBW is that it lets you go and create an embedded image on the fly from the runtime in a matter of half an hour.
Wow.
So ICE is kind of the more advanced tool that will allow you to do things like configure your settings in the image. But IBW is really a quick and dirty way to go and get up and running with Embedded Standard 2011.
Nice. Which is the name of the product.
Which is
the name of the product. We might as well pimp this, because this is part of what we do, right? We talk about the product. So this is Windows Embedded Standard 2011.
Right.
Could you have made the title a little longer? Like maybe thrown
something
extra in there?
We have previous products with longer titles.
Really?
Yes.
Excellent.
Our team's known for that.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, a lot of your code is Windows 7
code. It is, yeah.
And your own.
And our own.
Cool. So again, I'm trying to understand kind of a lot of the core innovations in the kernel in Windows 7 involve things like the remover of the dispatcher lock. It doesn't really impact you guys because you don't really worry about the scalability to 256 cores.
Right.
Not yet, anyway. So, which you obviously aren't going to replace that work because it's fundamental.
Right. In general, we don't want to have our own kernel if possible. So
have to remove a lot out of the kernel that's Mark Brusinovich oversees, right? Because it's too big to fit on a device.
No,
we actually
keep the kernel as it is.
As it is.
Yep. Yeah.
So there's a reason why we don't go and kind of hack around existing Windows code base, right?
Sure.
First of all, the value of Windows Embedded Standard is the fact that it's Windows. So
agreed.
You can go and write a desktop app. Whether you're writing Win32 native or whether you're on managed code or whatever, assuming you have the dependencies for that application in the image that you just built, it's going to work. No need to go and port, no new tool set, nothing. The application just works.
And the driver.
The driver model just works, the same driver model, right? You can just go and pick off-the-shelf hardware and, basically drivers for the most popular OS in the world, which is Windows, and it's just going to work on the embedded OS. So we don't want to play around with that. The second thing is sort of internal reason, which is maintenance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So think about if someone is building an ATM, right?
Yeah.
And there's a security patch that Windows ships. We don't want to go and port that security patch because it might be a zero-day attack, and we need to deliver it as fast as we can.
Understood.
So we'll take the same security patch from Windows and deliver that to the embedded device. That's why we don't necessarily fork the code in every place. We try to keep it symmetric as possible.
Okay, but so let's look at the example. So when you have something like a video game in Las Vegas, like a poker game, which does only a modest amount of stuff, and an ATM which has a UI, they both have UIs, so they're going to need those facilities. But what about like the really small devices, right? I mean, why are they really going to need the Windows kernel?
For small, yeah. So when Mike talked about kind of the foundation of our product, mm-hmm. It's something that we call embedded core. It has the kernel. Mm-hmm. It also has a bunch of other things. It's sort of the lowest common denominator for, you know, a variety of the devices that we're running on today.
So here's the thing. I think this is where my confusion is stemming from. The kernel is an overloaded term. Right, so there's the kernel that David Cutler would say was the kernel. I think that's probably what you're talking about.
Yes.
Then there's the kernel, what I'm thinking, which is everything that lives under user mode.
Oh, okay.
Which, of course, is not the case.
Okay.
So I get it now.
Okay.
I get it. We're talking about David Cutler's terminology.
Yes. Yeah.
Perfect. So let's keep on going. Right.
You can talk about, you know, I talked about how to customize the UI and how to.
Yeah, well, I can talk about it now. Also, like, we have touched a few, I guess, binaries that, you know, just enable some scenarios. I just want to touch back on that because we did change the loader for one of our features. I mentioned earlier we had the feature called Horn. So there's a lot of resume hibernation code in the loader itself, mm-hmm. and that's one piece of binary that we actually forked off and own, you know, we own ourselves. So anytime there's, you know, some servicing impact on the binary, we're going to have to, you know, integrate that, those changes, retest it, and then redeploy it for our customers. Mm-hmm. So that's a major headache for us. So in general, we try to limit what we change. But, you know, there's probably a handful of binaries that we're going to change ourselves.
Cool.
So, like, there's other technologies that we're going to be introducing with this product that we didn't have previously. It's mainly for UI customization and lockdown. So, for example, we have some new ways that you can customize your login experience. Mm. We're basically providing sample code on how to customize the login, so you can, you know, make it just the way you want it. You can customize the background of the login screen. You can, you know, we have support to launch new shells. In the past, it was kind of hard. You had to kind of hack it that way. Mm. And we have this new feature called a dialog filter. But basically, what you can do is you can kind of automate windows, you know, automatically suppress certain windows that you don't want. So for embedded scenarios, that's very important, just to lock down the whole UI. So, you know, if something pops up, we can use this tool or the service that would watch for these windows and just kind of kill them.
Okay.
So that's new and it's pretty exciting for our customers, I think.
So then when you're talking about modifying the shell, it's the user experience shell.
Right.
Like theming it and like being much more control.
Instead of launching like Explorer and, you know, getting that familiar Windows interface, our customers would produce their own shell.
So just again, just, you know, bear with me here. Windows CE, just once and for all, clear my own head. Like, how is Windows CE different than this? Is it not just a flavor of this? What's going on here?
So Windows CE is derived from a completely different code base. It's derived from the Windows Mobile code base, and we're derived from the Windows Desktop code base. Another difference is with respect to the family of processors that CE is running. We right now are running on x86 and x64. In Windows Embedded Standard 2011. WinC also runs on ARM, MIPS, and, of course, x86.
So that's like what the Zune is, powering the Zune, right?
I think, originally it was some sort of CE, but they kind of forked it off and owned it.
Fair enough. I just wanted to get that out, because it's a good thing, right? Because they're both embedded operating systems in some sense, right? And they run on lesser hardware.
So there are a couple more changes, if I may add. The footprint of CE is smaller, and CE is real-time kernel. CE, you know, has a hard boundary that's, you know, how fast it can respond to interrupt. You know, we're just like Windows. We're not real-time.
Okay.
They also don't have exact compatibility with Windows that we do. So
sure.
Our claim to fame is that if run on Windows and you pick the correct component, pick the correct packages, it would run here no problem. There are some edge cases that it doesn't work like that. It's not a plugin for C.
Okay. And so let's go back to sort of some other significant changes from what people have been running for, 8 years now? Is that since you were based on the XP code base?
Yeah.
With, of course, modifications. You guys have released service packs and stuff.
Yeah.
So what are some like fundamental, are there any fundamental changes?
So just to kind of to add on the dialog blocker thing.
Cool.
I mean, I think all of us have probably ran at one point in our life seeing a kiosk device that is running Windows with a message box.
Yes.
An error message
I
box.
I see that at restaurants. Man.
Right, and some sort of a piece of paper taped in saying not working, right?
Yeah.
Most of us have seen that. So
yes.
One of the things that dialog filter is going to do is if those kiosk OEMs will choose Windows Embedded Standard 2011, is go and prevent that. So we can with this dialog filter, we can actually go and kill any pop-ups or message boxes from being basically shown up on the device.
That's cool. But the exception information would be sent like email to some developer somewhere, right?
We can
update a database.
Yes.
So in this world of parallel computing that everyone's sort of freaking out about, and I guess we should be, since you guys are based on the pre-existing kernel, it's not a problem that you worry about, right? You're free from worrying about that problem specifically.
You may want to go and kind of redraw the famous picture of E-Core and all those things, just kind of to talk about the dependency.
I thought you were going to say, I can tell you, but then I'm going to have to kill you.
No,
I was like, whoa, man.
Let me say a few things before I go on.
Please do.
Differences between the XP embedded and 2011 standard. Mm-hmm. As far as the components are concerned, there are technology difference, tool difference, each difference. But as far as the components are concerned, XPE had thousands of components, I think.
Yeah, 10,000 overall, 9,000 drivers, 1,000 OS.
Wow. More than I could count, right? In embedded, it's a lot less. The granularity is a lot less. There is a concept of foundation, which I'm going to draw on the board. Mm-hmm. And then there are roughly 120, 130 packages. These packages and 400 drivers, but drivers are not in this category. These packages are then grouped together, under functionality. So it's 6-7 functionalities and, under those 130 packages. Mm-hmm. So granularity is a lot less than what it was in XP embedded. But we've put a lot of energy in separating technologies. So our packages would contain, group of technologies, group of Windows technologies. And the boundaries are pretty clear. So if you want, a given technology, you pick this package. And you still may get the stuff that you don't need, depending on, what your use case is. Mm-hmm. But hopefully it's not going to be as bad as having it.
Cool. And I think the other cool thing that in that whole model is that when you change functionality in a package, you can just slip that package in without having to worry about slipping, package down a layer, two, three layers, because there's some dependency. So the modular story is you guys are actually ahead of the game in that department, as far as Windows.
Go to the board.
Okay.
So just kind of quick addition. One of the also the kind of the coolest thing in this release is that we have now the ability to go and install packages on the fly. You don't need to go to the dev box and kind of rebuild your image necessarily. You can take the existing packages and their dependencies and actually project them to a running image.
Wow.
So one of the kind of the interesting demos that we've done is to go and boot to a device with command line as the shell.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really kind of ugly.
Yeah.
You go and you run the script to go and project, for example, Explorer as the shell package, log off, log on, and then you have the new Win7 Explorer with Superbar and
amazing.
Everything.
Yeah. Very, very cool. All right, so now we have a picture. I'm going to actually move over here because it needs to happen like this.
All right. So what I'm drawing is conceptually what a dependency graph of a very simple image would look like. Everything that you have in the system will have this foundation in it, embedded foundation. And let's say for this case, you just want a Zoom-like device. So you will pick up a media, Windows Media Player. Windows Media Player will bring with itself, some required dependencies. I'm using an example that it would need codecs, for example, to work. But it would also have some optional dependencies. So let's say that in your Zoom device, you want to connect to other Zoom devices, you want to have some networking, wireless networking capability. So there is an optional dependency to wireless. Depending on your use case, you may want to bring wireless in, which in turn would bring, its own required dependencies and, optional dependencies if you want to use the optional functionality of it.
Cool.
Excellent. Very nice.
Talk about what is optional dependency. The optional dependency is sort of an overloaded term. I mean, it's really about...
In fact, it sounds like an oxymoron. Optional dependency.
So what it means is basically a dependency that is needed to satisfy something that we don't consider a key scenario. Mm. The IE2 search is an interesting one. You know, if you take a look at the browser... kind of the core functionality of the browser is to go and render an HTML page.
Mm-hmm.
IE has this Bing search text box in the control panel, and if you go and type something in that text box, it actually has a dependency to some dictionary files that are part of Windows Search, desktop search.
Okay.
So that's an optional dependency of IE to desktop search, right? To go and render an HTML page, you don't necessarily need desktop search, but to provide full functionality of IE, including that search text box, you know, you need to have desktop search.
Okay. Which, do you guys have desktop search?
Yeah, we have, if not 100%, then 99.9% of Windows 7.
And you guys are running full IE as well?
Full IE is one of the options, or you can just go and take the HTML rendering engine and build your own browser, you know.
Interesting. So I guess one of the questions I would ask is, you know, what prevents like a, you know, PC manufacturer for, you know, installing Windows Embedded instead of Windows 7 and be like, I want to streamline the Windows experience for customers who buy my laptop. Does that make sense? I mean, if you're going to have the same kernel and then the modularity to the extent where I'm assuming Win32 lives in one of these modules. I mean, what's going on here?
So Embedded is not a general purpose OS. Embedded is a single purpose OS, right?
Okay.
PCs are general purpose devices.
Cool.
Therefore, Embedded is not suitable for a PC or a laptop or a desktop device that you're buying from, you know, Dell or HP.
Okay, fair enough.
If an OEM wants to go and build a thin client or something like that, yeah, they will use Embedded. But
okay.
Because it's single purpose.
Perfect. So it's optionally general purpose. I'll go there with you. No, I'm kidding. It's single purpose. I'm playing.
You can't install Office, for example, and you know, assume you can run desktop applications. But you could install like parts of Office, say the
viewers,
Excel, you know, engine, and then you know, write an application on top of that. But it's got to be single purpose.
But I mean, the scenario doesn't make sense. I mean, if you're going to have a piece of hardware that has, you know, a couple gigabytes of RAM, 4 cores. I mean, come on, you know.
You want
give me a break.
Right.
But I just wanted to talk about that because I really like the modularity story because I think that's something that's very interesting. Very cool. So pan over here one more time, sort of see this.
Okay, so this picture, of course, is extremely simplified. The foundation itself has a bunch of dependencies. When you want to bring it, it says, well, I need one language. This is another one of those optional dependencies that says I would need one of this group, at least one. So you could have English and German, but you have to pick one. There is a bunch of other stuff that happens on the foundation, so you can configure foundation differently. Does it need USB booting or does it need regular USB? So the picture is extremely simplified. It took a long time to get here.
Really cool. That's a very hard problem. And I'm assuming that the great work done in Windows, even in Vista time frame, and Vista should get credit for that, the understanding of dependencies and the other great things they did in 7 around, you know, when to load certain libraries, be intelligent about that, certainly has paid dividends in your world. Right.
Yeah, I think the big difference was kind of the move from XP to Vista when we kind of moved the way we build the OS from one big infile with, you know, tens of thousands of files to really a manifest base which expressed some metadata, what this component is, these are the binaries reflected in it, these are the registry settings or the registry keys that are involved in the functionality of that feature. We basically took that and kind of try to package it specifically for Embedded, simplify for Embedded, and also make it in a way self-contained. So when you run full Windows or you know when you're working in Windows, you kind of tend to assume that the world is there. So you know you have the Explorer shell. The Explorer shell is the default shell. So if I need an API, instead of calling create process, I'll just go and, you know, call shell execute, for example, right?
Yeah.
Because it's simpler and the shell 32 is there.
Mm-hmm.
But we that's kind of the challenge, is to come with the mindset of not everything is there to something as big as Windows, and try to really go and kind of partition it to logical pieces that actually make sense.
Certainly. So it's essentially a domain-specific operating system, as opposed to, you know, I mean, if the domain is going to be gambling in Vegas while you're having a Manhattan, and you have a little UI with some cards on it, right? Windows Embedded.
Yep.
So is Windows Embedded in Vegas?
We actually have a partner,
that's
talking to us right now about shipping casino gaming devices running Windows Embedded standard, yes.
Excellent. So what else?
I was going to say, we know the key to get the...
huh? Oh, yeah.
Shh, you're not supposed to.
Oh, man. Wow, you know, that would be kind of fun.
We know the back doors, yeah.
Okay, well, I'll give you the money back. Okay. And they won't be able to actually film you and understand that. Just go, wow, this guy's incredibly lucky. But so are we missing anything that you wanted to get out there for, 2011, we'll call it, Windows?
Maybe I want to talk about the kind of the static dependency analysis that we're doing.
Oh, nice. Excellent point. A few minutes ago, Oren referred to the fact that if you had all your dependencies on Windows, your system would just work. Well, we've recently added one of the tools we've added was a static dependency analyzer, so that you can point it at your application, and we will get you farther down that road of building your system by analyzing your static dependencies and go ahead and populating your system with those packages that are relevant.
Nice.
So it's a feature that we've been, that lots of people have requested in the past, so we're pretty excited about.
Excellent. Very cool. Now, you guys spend all your time writing C, huh? C,
C++. Actually, the tools are mostly written in C Sharp.
Wow. Excellent. So you have a .NET module, right? .NET
dependency. That's for the tools. They're running on the dev box. So.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. That's excellent, man. Glad to see that. Well,
this is the C guy.
Stuff. You're the C guy.
Well, we actually have some C++ in the drivers, but I heard, you know, well, there's trade-offs there. But yeah, most of our code is C, some C++. So far, we don't have anything managed yet in our runtime modules.
Sure. I mean, just like Windows doesn't.
Yeah.
Kernel.
We want to be, you know, running on the basics. Whatever's in the foundation is kind of our, you know, our cutoff point.
Now, what about, like, you know, Windows first and foremost is a platform, right? So people build businesses off of writing Windows apps. In the embedded space, do you have a large developer community that actually writes applications targeting your platform from, you know, Visual Studio?
No, we don't, and we don't because it's, again, what's the most popular platform in the world? It's Windows.
Yeah.
Therefore, it's just a matter of taking an existing Windows app, of satisfying the dependencies, maybe doing some work to actually go and deploy it. So in the past, in XP Embedded, we used to have sort of a different manifestation tool. Instead of just using MSI or Windows Installer, we kind of forced people to go and wrap their stuff in another layer of metadata. We don't have that anymore. So the idea is, if you have an application, whether it's, you know, bare bone binaries, executables, DLLs, or MSI that wraps those, using our tools and using our platform, you can just go and bring that to the embedded world and get the value out of it.
Perfect. So finally, I will ask you, I mean, how did you guys, you know, end up doing this? I mean, how did you end up in this space from a career perspective? Are you guys from Windows originally, or what's going on here?
I'm kind of coming full circle. I started off 22 years ago in a very small mom-and-pop shop that was doing embedded systems, but on as pre-Windows, of course.
Oh.
And then I came to Microsoft. My first assignment was to work on Windows, the Windows NT with Dave Cutler, who you just mentioned a few minutes ago.
So excellent.
Kind of coming full circle.
All right. Very cool. And what did you work on with back then? Were you in the kernel world?
I was not in the kernel. Well, I started off first in OS2 on file systems and then moved from there into the shell for Windows NT.
So you know Robert Hess then, huh?
Yeah.
From the OS2 days.
Exactly.
Right on. So you've been here for a while.
Yeah. Exactly, for about 22 years.
Nice. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Wait a minute. No, you didn't quite beat Larry Osterman. He's got three on you.
I do know Larry, though.
So I have about 20 years of experience, but my experience with Windows is limited to since I joined Microsoft, which is 3-4 years ago.
Cool.
Before that, I was doing embedded devices, embedded real-time operating systems and such. And I was in East Coast, so I moved for Microsoft to the West Coast. And I started refactoring Windows, and it's been quite a ride.
Excellent. Well, great job, man.
Okay.
It's very cool. I hope to see that even further.
Absolutely.
Further modularization.
Absolutely,
man.
Yes.
Right on.
So I started in Microsoft 7 years ago. Before that, my background is Windows internals and drivers and you know, hacking Windows, hooking Windows.
Nice.
In different companies. I joined the embedded team. Back then, the embedded team was part of the Windows organization. I was asked to go and do something really quick around componentizing Vista back in 6 years ago. Turned out to be 3 years of work while we kind of delivered componentization for Vista and also created Server Core for Windows Server 2008.
Nice.
And then kind of moved back to the embedded space, taking all the stuff that I've learned and kind of implementing that with embedded.
Excellent.
So I've been at Microsoft 10 years. I started off on the deployment team, so I had a lot of background on, you know, putting the OS back together in that respect and doing it the wrong way for a big blob. But eventually when the, you know, componentization came to Windows, as part of that effort to kind of create that infrastructure and componentize the OS. And after that, you know, I started working on more of the EVEs and the drivers and, you know, actually changing the OS and hooking it.
Excellent, man. Well, hey, it was great to meet you guys.
Thank you very much.
Really interesting work. And we'll come back and visit you, and we'll dig a little deeper into a few of these things.
Okay.
And perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.